Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Land for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. Technology is a big part of business and personal life. Just think about all the technology you have around you, all the multiple computers, from your desktop to your laptop to your notebook, your smartphone. It is a computer. It is all technology. So my question for you is this. In what way are the technologies that you use part of your overall business strategy, your strategic plan? Well, how do you use technologies or how your technology is supported? You know, when someone calls and asks to speak to your IT department, where does that call go? I know that for some mid-range or small businesses, they don't really have an IT department. Here's another one for you. How secure is your business, your data, your full infrastructure? All rather good questions, don't you think? I like to think so. We all know that technology advances at a rapid speed. And think about the changes that you've seen in the last 30 years, 20 years, 10 years. How about 5 years? Now, 15 years ago, when I was a senior manager within Global Technology Solutions for a major company, we kept everything indoors. What I mean is that we would own and support our technology, our infrastructure, our security for our company. We have a capital outlay for computing technology that we had to financially justify, and I felt like we were always going through this financial justification loop for why we were buying a laptop, why we were putting a new server room in, why were we wiring everything up or taking wires out. We introduced outsourcing services and people, kept the core resources internally, but then kept all our data also. Move forward, global events happened, and we had to rethink all of our practices. We realized we needed to have business continuity plans to start housing data and quick start centers in different locations, not just in our city, but on the planet Earth, so we would be an operational business. Now, obviously, I'm talking about some big business, but what about for your small business? The proposed or purpose was to protect the company in the event that something major would happen, and we needed to be up and running fast. What would happen if your organization went down suddenly because your technology was no longer operational and you needed to get up and running fast? Could you do it? Nowadays, cloud technology is the thing. Maybe there's a few other things that are a thing, but people are still saying, hey, it's in the cloud. Where we share resources, rent our space, and have our teams at our disposal to support your company. Keeping your business secure and operational. Things have changed from the days of owning your own server farms and to sharing space in a digital world. And I think that's where we're going to start today with Resolute Technology Solutions with the CEO, Rod DeVos. Hopefully I got that right, Rod, and Trish Bishop. Rod, Trish, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so get into the microphone. Yep. I did sort of not get your last name quite right, did I, Rod?
It's DeVos.
DeVos, yeah. See, I told you, the first thing I wanted to do was get in there and sort of pronounce it one way, DeVos. Rod, Trish, why don't we start off and just with a bit of a background question and everything, and why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? Why don't we start with Rod?
Okay. So I'm born and raised Manitoba boy, lived in rural Manitoba on a family farm. My parents came from an entrepreneurial family. They ran their own farm, and they ran several businesses as well. Growing up on a farm and being the only kid in the family, of course, with asthma, obviously I was driven to other things than farming. However, ironically, we do a fair bit of work in the tech space for agriculture, so it's come full circle for me. At a point in my career, anyway, that we were working for a company, I had a great IT team, and I was their CIO, in charge of their technology footprints, both in Canada and the U.S. The Canadian division was sold off, and the U.S. division was left. And at a certain point in time, it made sense to move that head office to New York. And as much as that's a great place to go for a weekend, taking a show and have a great time, it was hard to uproot all of our families and Manitoba lifestyle. So at that point, we did a successful transition. I opened the doors of Resolute, started the business, and I just hired my entire team.
Oh, okay.
And we went up and running since then. So hold on.
So
12 years ago.
You hired your entire team that you're working with from the other company.
I did.
How awesome is that? Sorry, I have no idea.
Well, I had a great team, and it made no sense to put them all in the street. So we all worked well together for years.
Yeah.
We'd all worked together, a good part of us anyway, for two companies together in the past, and we just decided to throw up a different logo, our own.
Okay. I want to go back to that just a little bit, okay, because I think that in itself is its own great story.
Totally.
Trish, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm originally from Halifax, Nova Scotia, and had the amazing opportunity to launch the first internet service provider in Canada. And we were actually the first ISP to go public. So that was just a tremendous journey. I stayed on the bleeding edge of technology for a very long time and just was, it had great leadership that allowed me to play wherever I wanted to play, which gave me just a huge breadth of capabilities. So I've worked quite a bit, mostly in North America and a little bit in Western Europe over the years, mostly a project manager in a lot of those engagements, but now the director of service delivery with Resolute, and loving my time in Winnipeg. I've only been here just over a year, so
Okay. Yeah, right. So
I'm kind of new to Winnipeg, but I must say, culture wise, it's very much like Halifax.
Awesome.
People are super friendly,
yeah,
and I'm really loving my time here. So
yeah, you said so you did come from Halifax. Then?
Not directly.
Oh, where'd you come from? Out of curiosity.
Halifax to Vancouver Island,
okay,
to Saskatoon,
yeah,
to Winnipeg.
So you're slowly making your way back east.
I know.
So here's a bit of a story for you.
Yeah.
Newfoundland.
Yeah.
Winnipeg.
Yes.
Right. Vancouver.
Yeah.
Calgary.
Yes.
Winnipeg. I'm working my way back east. So I just thought I'd share that with you.
Yeah, you got a two Winnipeg hit there, though.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Well, you know, halfway in between, right? And I share the same sentiments as you. Definitely incredible cultural diversity. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've noticed the second time around is that people will invite you into their homes for dinner and stuff.
Yes.
And they'll do stuff with you.
Yes.
Versus I've lived in other big cities where you just literally are, I don't know, ships passing the night. That's sort of the wrong words, isn't it? You just sort of pass each other on the road to something else, right? Yeah.
I've learned that there's a difference between nice and friendly.
Nice and friendly.
Yeah.
Eh?
Nice is when people are very nice to you.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But friendly is when they invite you into their home.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
There you
okay.
go.
I like that overall. In the last little bit that we have left here, why don't you just give us the high level bit on Resolute technology?
What it sure. is? So we're an IT service company. We target typically the medium-sized companies. So we service businesses, essentially. We don't go to consumer or to retail. We basically support businesses for their technology needs.
Okay.
And it can be projects, it can be consulting, or it can be full service. Some clients come to us saying we're not happy or with our current IT situation, or we're growing and we can't seem to get enough people to in order to look after things, or we're expanding to different offices outside of the city and outside of our reach. Can you help us? In which case, they outsource their entire function to us, and we become their IT.
Okay. With that thought in mind, I thought that was a really great summary, by the way. We'll take a short break, and when we'll come back, we'll sort of leapfrog from what businesses are looking for within an IT particular environment. Richard Lamb for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am hanging out with Rod and Trish today from Resolute Technology Solutions. Just before the break, we were talking a little bit about their company. I'm curious as to, you were talking a bit about the types of clients that you're working with. You're more business to business. Is there sort of a range in business to business that you work with? You know, small, medium, huge, mega companies? Like, what tends to be your stable, the space you work in?
Okay, so we have, for large companies, they'll either come to us for outsourcing a particular project they would like us to deliver. And these are companies that clearly they have their own IT and they're looking to either for a niche skill or a skill set or experience in a particular area, looking for people that have been there and done that, again, with experience.
They're looking to augment their workforce.
Yeah. Yeah, or their staff aug. They're short a particular niche skill that they know we have in the market. The medium-sized business companies are either going through growth or they have staff turnover or they're embarking on an acquisition or a merger, in which case they're looking for companies that can help them with specific skills in that. Or as they grow and they're not able to keep up with their own internal IT, they're looking for solutions to outsource. Where right from somebody who picks up the phone becomes a Resolute person to fix their PC, run their network, take the call in the middle of the night, implement their core applications, and actually help them plan do their IT budgets for them and do their strategy.
Basically,
to align with their business.
You're the IT department.
We are their IT department on an outsourced basis.
I'm curious as to, and I'm going to ask you next if is there another level also, but when you say medium-sized companies, in Canada, depending on where you are, it's defined very differently. So in our marketplace or your marketplace, how do you define a mid-sized company?
It can be, like, in terms of employee count, it can be anywhere from 50 to 300 seats, let's say.
Okay, so that's a pretty good mid-sized company in the Manitoba market.
Right.
That's sort of categorized. Correct. I often joke if Calgary is the head office of major corporations within the resource industry, Winnipeg is the head office of mid-range companies, right?
Yeah.
And if you do the number of head office counts, it's huge.
Yes, it's
with
true.
Offices, branch offices, and all the other major cities going west, there's a trend.
Yeah.
West.
They go west first.
Yeah. Go west first. And you see it a lot, which to me is I like to celebrate that. Every chance I get. I think it's an important
point. And we do support their branches either west or east. We have a fully bilingual help desk to make sure that we cover, locally and cover Quebec.
Yeah, so you got to cover wherever their clients are.
Yeah, correct.
So I was curious. So there's the large corporation type and could be governmental or what have you. Then there's the mid-range business. Is there another layer also? Or does that tend to be your area?
For smaller businesses, if they have projects to get going, we'll help them with those. So stand them up if we have to in terms of getting going with technology.
Okay.
Also, project delivery for them. Because typically, in some cases, you need just too many skills. So it's like a Swiss Army knife sometimes. I need project management. I need to do the designs. I got to pick a package or pick a piece of technology and then look after it. Even if they start by going to the cloud, even that takes setup time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that's where the expertise comes in.
Correct.
They can either have somebody in their business try to take it on, and maybe they're responsible for operations or what have you, but the whole IT side is a whole other ball of wax unless you're not knowledgeable and experienced in it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And even if it's for a point period of time to get them up and running, we may not be their IT going forward. We will deliver the project, and they'll be in production by the time we're finished.
So I'm always curious about trends in the technology industry, and I'm going to preface it and use the word challenges because maybe trends mean something else, and so maybe we can split the question a bit. But based on the clients that you're serving at this point in time, what are some of the challenges that you're seeing within the technology industry?
Challenges are, Trish will talk about that, but workforce-wise, there's a fairly significant shortage of IT folks, essentially, available to join the industry and help customers out. They have a hard time with recruitment, and because people have choice, it's an employee market, essentially, of opportunities for them.
Still, are there certain key roles and responsibilities in the IT industry that are good career choices?
Absolutely.
I want this one for the younger people thinking about what they're doing.
There's two, because the systems are relatively stable these days in terms of operating system and layer upon layer, you can almost do anything with an iPad or a phone.
Yeah.
And, the technology's stable.
Yeah.
So then the next step is how do I mine the data that I do have to make a better customer experience, to retain my customer base or enhance my customer base or attract new ones?
Yeah.
So I go through and it's called data analytics, and it's kind of, I go through my data, I mine it as if I was mining coal. I look for the gems, and I look for trends. I look for predictive behaviors based on their either buying patterns, whether geographically located, what kinds of products they're chasing. And I try to create for them the next better user experience based on the data that I do find. An example is like 7-Eleven. They mine all their till data in order to find out, and they'll change the flavors of Slurpees by location.
By location. Mm-hmm. So that's very specific. That's sort of not
they hone it right down.
Yeah.
In terms of data analytics for insurance companies, heavy investment in analytics to help them figure out, to try to stop claims, essentially. So preventive claims.
Okay.
So much like a property insurer would insure your house, they will now actually offer you potentially, they'll mine the data of the claims to determine what the cause of claims leakage is, essentially. So it's not catastrophic things. You're not waiting for the next, they're not waiting for the next hurricane. They're actually trying to fix the leaking pipes in your house from happening. Okay. Because they're more frequent than the catastrophe that's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like, do you want overland water insurance in Winnipeg? I mean, I don't know if that's the best example, but I sit there and go, you know, I've had to answer this question lately. And there's obviously a reason why that's now showing up, right? There's
something. Or even their products and their riders. So in today's world, people depend on technology fairly heavily, and they're creating new insurance products for cyber threats.
Yeah.
Because you can hack into a home network and steal someone's identity.
Well, there you go, right? We've talked about, so actually I need to close off this segment, but I'm sort of curious when we come to the next segment, can we sort of put a title around what you just told me as a career opportunity? It's Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am hanging out right now with Rod and Trish, and we have been talking a bit about the IT industry. So we set it up this way. We're talking about the challenges in the industry overall. I think, Rod, we were talking about resources, and you use this word analyst or analytics. So, and I was starting to talk about, well, what kind of position title might that be? Like, you know, so what are, we're putting into titles, what type of title type things might it be? And then what are the trends? So whichever way you want to guys want to go. Trish, you're going to answer this one?
Sure, I'll take this one.
There we go.
So there's a number of titles. Like if you're looking for people who are looking for their next career, there's a number of titles that they would be that we would be looking for some of these initiatives. So whether it's a business analyst, a data analyst, sometimes referred to as a master data analyst, data scientist. And it's not all just about the data. So we've got architecture too. We've got everything from an application architect to a solution architect, infrastructure architect. So there's a number of different roles that all tie into how we actually are able to execute on these things.
Okay. Where do, this is, might sound like a simple question or a silly question, but where do these people come from? Are they born?
No.
Yes. So it made you laugh.
Wow, how do you answer that question?
I know.
Go ahead.
Typically, they've, to be a data scientist, you have to have worked with a lot of data, or you have a, if you're going to do predictive analysis, then typically you're mining the data and you're writing algorithms against it, so you've got a decent math background if you're doing any kind of calcs based on it. If you're doing predictive behavior based on correlations, then essentially you've been a programmer at some point, you've written algorithms, and now you're taking your career essentially to the next level. So you do have experience. You won't come right out of school, typically being, you know, the data scientist.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got to work it up, right? Yeah. Just like any career, right? You start somewhere. Often say to people, you know, you start as a technical professional, whatever that might be, right? And then from there, you eventually, you know, grow your career. No different than yourself, Rod, because you ended up being a CIO within your organization and eventually the CEO in your present organization.
Correct.
Right, yeah. Go ahead, Trish.
Well, I was just going to say, I you know, this is getting very technical, and one of the things that I try to stay away from is people believing that it's all about the code.
Okay,
because it's not all about the code, right? And it's not all about the programming. You know, we need to have those people who can really put those thought processes around it. So that's a different skill set.
Analytical thinking.
The analytical thinking. And it's huge because we do have a current education system that is, you know, driving this idea of STEM. And I don't know that STEM is the answer for some of that thought process, right? So if you go into computer science, that's great if you want to be the developer, if you want to be writing code and all that kind of great stuff. But there's some people who have significant technical aptitude that don't require the math and science in order to bring huge value to some of these processes. So it's a different skill set.
So let's just step back a second. You use the term STEM. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume that it's an acronym.
Yes. Science, technology, engineering, mathematics.
There you go. There you go. I heard somebody put, at some point in time, put English in there too.
Okay.
Or language. I can't remember which one it was used.
Yeah,
right?
I haven't seen that one.
Or creativity was the other one.
And that's another piece of design thinking. We were just at Disrupted here last week, which was fantastic. ICTEM put that on for us. And I've actually been speaking to some of the students at Red River College. So, and what we're seeing there is we are seeing this idea of the creative design thinking.
Yes.
The analytical thinking. We're moving out of this math and science idea of you have to have math and science to get into IT. I'm terrible at math. I still don't know my 9 times tables. Like, let's be real here. Yeah. Does that mean that I can't do my job? No, it doesn't mean I can't do my job. So it really means there's this whole other skill set. And there's a couple of things that really got highlighted and have been highlighted more and more if we're on LinkedIn and things of that nature. Empathy, the ability to be more human, those soft skills, the ability to facilitate, communicate, elicit information from people, build those relationships. Those are huge in being able able to really support businesses and them being able to hit their objectives.
But that's a career. That's my career. That's a skill set that you often see in the business analyst world, where you have to be able to facilitate discussions,
absolutely,
either one-on-one or group facilitation. But you see in the project management world too, right?
Totally.
So with a slight distinction. So I've lived in this world,
yes,
so I have
absolutely
all sorts of thoughts about it. I got to be very careful here, you know, in terms of where we go with this, because suddenly we'll reverse the interview and I'll be answering. But go ahead, Rod. Looks like you want to make a point on this.
It's not a success day for us. If we've delivered software successfully to a client and it's working, we've converted the data properly, it's ready for use. If they haven't actually sometimes changed the way they've worked to get the maximum value out of the software they just purchased to implement, it requires a business change. So the business analyst team has to be equally as good as, you know, translating the business needs into technology requirements, but also working with the business side by side in order to actually get maximum value out of the change that has to happen. So you have to change the way you work sometimes based on how the software works, or change your processes in terms of what order you might do it. So in other words, most efficient is, don't take the paper that got sent in from a client. Give the client an online portal where they can enter it themselves. They've already got the data they need.
Yeah. So it's a one-stop.
Yeah, and then there's no room for error. And essentially the whole throughput of your processing, whether it's a claim or an input or you're buying something, regardless, it's just a way faster and a much better, tighter client experience.
It's interesting you would use that as an example, because I've had the opportunity to interview many guests on disruptive technologies and the transition to online businesses, right? And, you know, where really at one point in time you'd go into a store or you'd make a phone call, somebody would take your order, then that order would be put into data and then it'd be fulfilled. In this case here, as the buyer, the consumer, you're actually buying the product, you're putting your own information in and ordering it, and then poof, shows up, right?
Yep.
You know, yeah. The Amazon experience. But I've seen that in other businesses,
couple clicks
too.
And I'm done.
A couple of clicks.
I check out and I'm out.
And I'm done. Yeah, I could see that being valid. Yes, go ahead, Trish.
No, I mean, I guess my only other side of that is if we, again, just going back to exactly the points that Rod made, when you talk about that kind of change, we can't forget the fact that this change is happening to human beings. Right? So it's great to talk about process and it's great to talk about all that stuff. But at the end of the day, it's people who are executing the business, and it's people that we have to be engaged with at a very human level to help them to understand and to work with them to get them through that change. So change management is also a huge component of this work. Yeah, it's not just about putting in the best software, because any of us, and we've all been sitting here for a long time in the IT business, know you can put in the best software in the world. If people don't use it, you're done.
So I'm curious as to what kind of bodies are you looking for, right?
Yeah.
Now, I mean that in a very sort of open
Absolutely.
Question, right?
Yeah.
Because when I think about the workforce, maybe that's the better question, is what is the makeup of the workforce at this point in time within this profession, and what would be the ideal makeup? I don't know if that's the best question.
I have some thoughts on that.
Well,
that's okay. And then I'll hand it over to Rod. So, you know, my thoughts on that are, you know, you definitely, there's no question that to work in the IT arena, I don't care if you have math and science necessarily, depending on what you're doing. What I do care about is, do you have technical aptitude?
Yes.
Do you understand how business works, right? And can you wrap your head around it? So it's one, you know, if you've never been in business, but you don't have the ability to really understand what that means, that's going to be an issue. And are you coachable?
Because
if you come in believing that you know everything out of the gate and you're not coachable, then you're actually of very little use to us, because every one of our clients is a different environment. You have to be able to ebb and flow with that like a chameleon. You have to be able to match their culture, match their business processes, match their needs. And that's a different experience every time. So for an organization like us, where we're so mobile across organizations, you very much have to be open, and you have to be very open-minded, and you have to be totally coachable and able to step into any of those roles and be comfortable in them.
Interesting you'd say that, because when I used to do a lot of hiring and other things in this industry, we would always say behind closed doors, we'd always say we could always hire somebody with the people skills, with technical capability, and teach them technology. Rarely we could hire somebody with the technical skills and teach them the people skills that were required. It was always a big
challenge. Yeah, we have heavy emphasis on soft skills, and because of the type of firm we are, where we're doing consulting, we have people, you know, having to adapt to whatever the culture is of our clients, because they may be on site, residents sitting side by side with our clients, and, you know, a tight member of one of their teams, they have to be able to adapt.
They have to be able to adapt very well to that. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue this discussion about what's happening in the IT industry and what you guys are up to. Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Rod and Trish from the IT industry, and we'll talk a little bit more about their organization in just a minute. You know, as I'm listening to you guys talk about the clients you serve, the types of projects that you're involved in, and the types of resources that you require, I can't help but think that businesses are at risk. Like, there's a lot of risk within the IT infrastructure or the technology field itself, and not so much in the technology field, but in organizations as we've embedded technology more and more and more into the work that we're doing. Maybe you could address that a little bit for me.
Sure, happy to. Absolutely. So as companies depend heavily now on their technology in order to run their business, they've meshed them into their processes, they're part of their customer service experience, and they're part of, you know, a key part of running your business. And, you know, the major question is what happens one day when that technology isn't available? So we've lost our building, the network's down, and we don't have access to our systems. So roughly 75% of small businesses don't have any kind of disaster recovery plan.
That's a lot. 75%?
Yeah. Small business.
Small business. So first of all, maybe we should define what a disaster recovery plan is.
It's the ability, it's a plan in place and that I can recover the data and my systems to be up and running in another location. So essentially, if I lost my office or I lost wherever my data center is currently, my computer room, if you want to call it that, that'll be up and running somewhere else so that I have it replicated somewhere. And it doesn't have to be physically replicated. With, you know, today's technology footprint, it could be replicated, you know, to the cloud.
Okay.
I could have a cloud service where my data gets pushed every time I update it, or at the end of the day, or periodically, in which case I don't have to go through the expense as a small business of another, you know, hardened data center or computer room with all the right level of chilling and et cetera, and security. I might be able to just say I'm down here and I bring up my cloud solution and I'm up and running over there. Along with that, though, is the ability to, you know, the business has to go through and identify what's really important to recover. So some of the things are not necessarily as important as others. So you set your priorities of these things must be recoverable. And you set objectives as to when they need to. I can be without that data for an hour, 2 hours, or no longer than 10 minutes or 15 minutes. Let's say I'm a trading organization and I have trades in the queue, and I'm going to have market loss if I don't get to complete my trade, or financial loss, in which case time is of the essence. So real time versus time that you could bring it back up by tomorrow. So there's lots of services out there. Customers in the small to medium business space are coming to us to ask us for assessments on, you know, how quick could we recover if we needed to? How do I go about testing this without, you know, bringing myself down in the middle of the day and having business interruption? And how do you document the success for that? And then part two of this is the business continuity side. And this is the business side of it, which is, where will my people work while my building is being either rebuilt or until it's ready for us to move back into?
Right.
In which case, I have a plan in place. I've rented something. Everyone works from home, and it can be as simple as that if you're a small business, or everyone's got mobile technology. We've got their complete images of the things that they use in the cloud. In which case, they can sign on from Starbucks and do their job.
And sort of take care of things.
And have a latte.
And have a latte at the same time. Yeah, I like staying home better, you know, but I can see, you know. And I think there's lots that's actually happening out there now for small businesses where you can actually create those virtual environments. So
correct.
From my perspective, there's lots of choices.
Yeah, and the next risk for medium to small business or any business, frankly, is security. So with cybersecurity and the amount of threats on the increase, like 15 times higher than they were in the past. Ideally, companies are protecting themselves by doing threat analysis. So they're hiring firms to do tests of their environment to make sure that they can't be hacked in any way. You're only as good as the test, though, so you have to keep on it in terms of patching, updating your antivirus, updating your firmware in your firewalls, and making sure that on an ongoing basis that you've protected your environment. It's not a one-time thing, it's an ongoing thing. So companies are protecting themselves by doing assessments, regular checks, and actually training.
Educating
their users. Don't open that email if it looks like it's suspicious in any way.
Yeah. It's interesting that you would say that, because I know I've worked with one client that they actually send out regular emails to test their own staff to ensure that they're educated in not opening inappropriate emails.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
So there are firms that do education like that. You can take it all online. You know, it's cloud-based. It doesn't have to cost a lot. You don't have to go to class for it, but essentially you just need to spend some time educating yourself about what looks appropriate for business and what doesn't and what to stay away from.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Are there certain things that are, when we talk about cybersecurity, are there certain trends right now that are specifically you talk about is 15%, 15 times more likely these days? I think that was the term you used. Is there certain things in the cybersecurity space that's really important?
Yeah, it's malware, that the kinds of things you open that arrive quite simply, or, you know, it's the malicious thing that you've gotten something, it's unleashed in your environment. And because we're in the connected world of replicating our data to our data center that might be in the cloud for recovery, I can actually infect both environments very quickly.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So you got to be careful not to do that. Tricia, do you want to weigh in on this?
No. Well, I mean, the only other one that really is prevalent right now is ransomware.
Okay.
You know, where basically your data gets held hostage and you have to pay to get it back. You know, so that's absolutely brutal for organizations. And if they're not ready for it, I think the stat that I saw not too long ago was something like 80%+ of small businesses are unable to recover from a security breach.
That's huge. That's quite significant.
Yeah.
80%. That's huge.
Yeah.
If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Just go to our website, ResoluteTS, as in technologyservices.com, and hit the contact page and shout out.
And you can just go from there. Trends. We were talking a little bit about trends. I know that there's all sorts of different acronyms that are sort of out there regarding trends. What are some of the other trends that are in the industry right now?
Internet of Things is a big trend. So basically taking, teching up all kinds of electronics, so devices, all the way from, you know, your thermostat in your home to devices for protective analysis in your home, like security systems, turn things on, turn things off, all capable from your smartphone.
My daughter does her lights now.
Does her lights
Yeah, she turns them blue and red and off and on by Siri turns them off.
Off and on. So it's all set in place there.
It's really fun.
Will it cook dinner?
One of the industry analysts predicts there'll be 500 internet-connected devices in the average home.
500 internet-connected devices in the average home.
I don't think I have 500 devices in my home.
Oh, you'd be surprised if you start to make the count. I know there's actually quite a few. I always thought it was humorous when it used to be, you know, a computer in everybody's home. And, you know, it wasn't too long that everybody had three or four. And then, you know, plus you add in the phones and everything. It doesn't take long.
And you may not have any say in it. Essentially, 95% of electronics starting in 2020, will have some sort of chip in it.
Yeah, smart technology of some shape or form. What are some of the other trends that are happening right now?
A lot of people still talk about the cloud as it is a trend.
Yeah,
it's mainstream now. So for the most part, it's not a trend anymore.
Yeah.
AI is another one we saw a lot of at the Disrupted conference as well. So artificial intelligence and that you know, that has real world implications. So even as simple as I think Mark Saltzman actually was showing the example of Amazon, when you go in and you select a book and then it shows you four other books that you might be interested in as a result of that, right? So that's a very simple example of AI, and then there's really complex examples of AI as well.
So
it'll be super interesting to see how that goes. Yeah,
I know that we could spend the whole day talking about technology, different trends and everything and going deep, but I have to say, what a show we've been having. If you have a final thought, what might that be for our listeners?
Spend the time to figure out how best to leverage technology, and then go chase that and make sure it's completely in alignment with your business.
That's actually a great thought, part of your strategic planning process. Thank you very much for joining me today. It's greatly appreciated. Love all your insights, and hopefully I'll have you guys back again at some point in time. To my listeners, thank you for tuning in, and if you have a thought on this particular topic, email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. Even if you need to connect with Resolute Technology Solutions, I'd be happy to connect you guys. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.